You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and a warm welcome along to the Daily Racing Podcast brought to you by William Hill. You join us on Wednesday's edition of the podcast. Sam Norris here, joined by Rory Delaghi to look ahead to the action. It's flat racing all the way on Wednesday. We're at Nottingham, Catterick and Lingfield in the afternoon, with Kempton Park in the evening. There's also an Irish card over at Leopardstown, so plenty to get your teeth stuck into on racing radio from 1:50pm with Gareth Topham, Chris Pimrott and Andrew Mount in the studio. But first things first, it's a warm welcome to Rory Delaghi. How are you, Rory?
I'm very well, thanks, Sam.
Good stuff. Looking forward to the 3 days at Aintree?
Very much so. It looks like it's going to be an even better Aintree than normal. Really exciting Grand National to look forward to, but also this decision by Willie Mullins to take a load of his horses across to Aintree, which is not par for the course, as he's in with a big chance of winning the Trainers' Championship, means that we're in for an absolute treat over the 3 days.
Yeah, correct. He's got something like 43 entries on the Friday alone or something, or he did have at the... 5 day deck stage.
Yes, and that's certainly, there's going to be plenty of representatives from the Mullins yard, and he means business in toppling Paul Nicholls, but Mr. Nicholls won't be giving up without a fight of his own.
Yeah, correct. Where do you stand on the Mullins horses in terms of backing them? Because this is, of course, a pretty big afterthought. We know all roads lead to Cheltenham with that yard, and this has sort of been taken in, as I say, as a bit of an afterthought. Would you be keen to be against them, or are you happy to be with them?
I wouldn't be against them in a blanket way, but you've got to take each of them on their merits and work out who's going to be coming on for races at Cheltenham and who will be suited by the track at Aintree. But the two festivals come pretty close together this year compared to last year when there was a big break. And
nice 4 week gap last year, wasn't it?
It's the same every year you look at it, and there are a lot of horses who perform well at Cheltenham who then run badly at Aintree, and you get a lot of horses who are just trained to peak for the spring, because now it's not just a case of Cheltenham. We say all roads lead to Cheltenham, but Willie Mullins is very, very well aware that Punchestown is very, very valuable these days as well, so he makes sure his horses are kept at the peak of their form through the spring period. So Aintree should fit in there as long as they've been, you know, as long as they're robust enough to take that. So you've got to look at them individually and see who you think is going to give their running. And there's no guarantee of that. There are plenty of horses who run at Cheltenham already who turned out fairly quickly and disappointed, including a long odds one shot at Carlisle the other day. So you do need to ask yourself questions about individual horses. Will they be at the peak of their powers? And it's a judgment call, really.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair enough. In terms of day one, Rory, we've got the declarations out for a couple of the big races. Of course, the Bowl declarations are out for that, and we've also got the decks out for the Doombar Aintree Hurdle. Both races have attracted a really good field. Cue card set to be very, very short for the Bowl. Takes on Jackadam again. Don Polly in the lineup. A couple of others in there as well. I think he's about 11 to 10 at the moment with us here. Is that a short enough price for Cue Card?
You can argue it's a short enough price for anything, given
that he's fallen on last start.
Yeah, although, you know, that shouldn't really be an issue for him, and he's always been a pretty reliable jumper since his novice days, and that was very much out of character for him at Cheltenham. Maybe just asked for too big a jump at a crucial stage there, but he was travelling really well in the race, even though he hadn't been foot perfect until that point. He was going through the race on the bridle and looked the biggest danger to Don Cossack. Whether he'd have won that battle is open to debate. Of course, it's difficult to know who would have won the King George had Don Cossack stood up, and it's a similar situation with the Gold Cup. But the level of his form throughout the year suggests that he's better than ever, including that run in the Gold Cup. It came late enough in the contest that you'd say he definitely would have finished first or second, and that means that as long as he's still in there pitching, he's got every chance of beating Jackadam. And of course, Jackadam's got a similar sort of question to ask, because he'd fallen at Cheltenham in his previous start. So you've got to also bring Don Polly into the equation, who would have finished well behind the pair of them at Cheltenham, but will be better suited by the softer ground. That he's liable to get. When we're saying soft ground, there's been plenty of rain around in the last 24 hours or so, and there's probably going to be more before the weekend. So there should be a fair degree of ease in the ground, and Don Pulley could bounce back. So it's certainly not a one-horse race, and I don't think it's a two-horse race either. It's a very, very good contest, but the winner should come from the top three.
Okay, a lot of people will be suggesting that the Aintree Hurdle is a one-horse race. Annie Power, warm odds on favourite for this one. Can she take this in again? The Wonder Mare looks unbeatable at times.
She was perfect in the Champion Hurdle. She hasn't always been perfect. Jumping's been a little bit slipshod on occasions in the past, even when she won on her reappearance before going to Cheltenham. But she was absolutely fantastic in the Champion itself. And to be honest, I was wary of her coming into it, but after she jumped two hurdles, it was very hard to see any other winner in the race. Everything she was doing was perfect. She was travelling over her rival. She had other horses in trouble. Again, if the ground comes up very soft, then you might see the likes of the new one and Camping Ground getting a lot closer. I don't think it will suit my tent or yours. He's the one I wouldn't want to have there. Camping Ground's an interesting one at what will probably be a biggish price. He was a big price in the Champion Hurdle. He couldn't go the pace there on fast ground at all. His best form is at 2.5 miles on soft ground. So now that he's got that again, or is liable to get that, he should go closer. But he'd only be looking for him to really hit the frame or for forecast purposes. If she runs to the same level of form she did at Cheltenham, she wins this.
Okay. Her first trip to Aintree as well, I believe. No concerns over the idiosyncrasies of the track?
No, really. It's not a particularly idiosyncratic track at all. The only issue that I have with Aintree, for horses who have been there before, indeed, is that it's very open up the straight. And you get a lot of horses making mistakes where they shouldn't be making mistakes. Horses are on their own, for example, who would normally have time to measure a fence or a hurdle. We've seen some of the best horses, the likes of Cotto Star, of Masterminded, etc., blundering on the way around, and similarly over hurdles. I think the issue you have there is because there's such an expanse and it's all level there as well, the horses get distracted, especially when they're on their own or when they're getting a little bit tired. And so horses who wouldn't normally make mistakes can make mistakes. And of course, we do have this ongoing debate about Ruby Walsh and the last hurdle slash fence in races as well. So you'll notice that at the last hurdle in the Champion Hurdle, very unlike Ruby, he asked her for a stride. He saw a stride and he asked her to pick up, give her a kick in the belly, which he wouldn't normally do. And again, you'll want to see him do that at the entry. I've seen quite a lot of followers at the last flight in the entry hurdle down the years. So it's not something you can take for granted, and it's probably a harder course than Cheltenham in that regard. And it's all about losing concentration rather than the sighting of the hurdles.
Okay, fair enough. In terms of the big one then on Saturday, Rory, the Grand National, of course, we're at the five-day deck stage as we record this podcast. And there's a couple of notable horses that are set to miss out at this moment in time. Pinot de Rey, of course, the winner in 2014. Highland Lodge, a former winner of the Beecher, both set to miss out, which has led the BHA to exploring the possibility of a system which guarantees previous winners of the National and the Beecher Chase a slot in the current year's renewal of the National. Would that be something you'd be in favour of?
It would, broadly speaking. I don't think it really matters what the conditions are, as long as the conditions are set out plainly and people know where they stand. And again, my problem with this is a scenario that was bound to happen. And for the BHA to think about it after the event, you know, the words stable door and horse bolting spring to mind, there's bound to be a scenario where a previous winner of the National is not going to get into the weights, or a horse. I mean, Highland Lodge put up his best performance in years to win the Beecher Chase. That was just his first run for a new yard. He looks, he was a horse who was placed in Hennessy a couple of years ago as a young horse. Clearly, he would be very interesting in the National. Pinot de Rey as a previous winner would be interesting. Mountainous has won two Welsh Nationals and is a high-class horse. But the nature of the race these days means we get an awful lot of horses who are in the 150s in the race these days. It makes perfect sense that horses who've proven themselves in similar races should have some kind of preference. It doesn't have to be that way. I mean, the BHA can say, listen, it's a handicap.
Yeah.
If you get in the weights, you get in the weights. That's the way it always works. I saw it suggested in one place as well that handicap marks or handicap performances at distances beyond 3 miles should really only count for this race, given that it is a 4 mile plus handicap.
It's interesting.
And therefore, horses who get in based on what they've done over 2.5 miles maybe are there, you know, under false pretenses.
Yeah.
Or you could, you know, price the race up, and anything that's priced up at over 100 to 1 would have questions to answer as to whether they should be in there. But anyone who has a horse with them miss the cut would argue that they should be in because they've met other criteria. I just think you shouldn't have to wait until people complain about this before you think about doing something about it, because it's clearly going to happen at some stage. You need to think about it in advance and work out what your ideal scenario is. And unfortunately, the BHA is not very good at being proactive. No. Everything's very reactive.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point, Rory. We'll leave it there then for Aintree and move on to matters closer at hand, i.e. Wednesday's racing. We've got three races from Nottingham and one from Kempton to come on today's edition of the podcast. We begin with Nottingham's 320. This is a condition stakes over five furlongs. Just six runners are lined up for this Class 3 events, but they never tend to attract massive fields, these condition stakes, Rory, but they're often interesting.
They are, yes. Six runners, seven runners, five runners and seven runners the last 4 years for this contest. And on the ratings, it's a two-horse race between Spirit Quartz and Poil Vinny. They've been running in either top handicaps or in group and listed company. Spirit Quartz is back with Robert Cowell, who had him in his younger days. He's been trained in France recently by Xavier Nakaji, but is back with Robert Cowell. My problem with Spirit Quartz and with Poil Vinny in this race is that the pair of them, not so much are unproven on heavy ground, the ground will be heavy at Nottingham, is that the pair of them have run on heavy ground and run below their best form, considerably so. In the case of Spirit Quartz, his poor run came at least in a Group 1 in the Prix de la Baye, where he ran his only bad race of the season a few years ago. And he has got form on good to soft and soft ground, but most of his best form is on good ground. Poil Vinny, again, he has won on soft ground. He won the Scottish Stewards Cup at Hamilton last year on soft. I didn't think it was particularly deep that day, and the time suggests it was really only good to soft. I don't think he wants it particularly deep either. But you respect him because it looks like he's been laid out for this race by Mick Appleby, who's got a very good record early season, particularly at Nottingham, which is one of his happiest hunting grounds. So Poil Vinny maybe just would get the nod over Spirit Quartz from me there, but I wouldn't be at all surprised to see a shock in this race. And I'm going to put up Intiba, who's got no chance on the ratings. But he's better than he's been able to show this year. He's had three runs in Maidan, and a lot of horses just don't take the travelling or the conditions in Maidan, and he's not fired at all. He was rated north of 100 when he went out there. His one win last season came on soft ground at Fontainebleau. He's got plenty of soft ground form down the years. And at least the fact that he's had three runs in Maidan this year will mean that he's pretty well forward. George Baker does well here. He tends to travel very strongly in his races. So he looks like, to me, like he's going to be a big price. The tissue I have has him in at 33-1. I'd have thought he deserves to be more like a 10 or 12-1 shot. So it's not a particularly strong case for him, but none of these are convincing in the conditions at all. You don't really have a highly rated mudlark in the field. And I think Intiba might just be able to shock them, given that a few of these will run below form, and I think he will probably give his running.
Okay. Roy chancing Intiba then in the 320 at a likely big price. We go to the 350 now, though. This is Nottingham's feature on Wednesday. The Further Flight Stakes, a listed event here over a mile and six furlongs. Nine runners line up for this listed race. What caught the eye here, Rory?
Clever Cookie is the obvious one. For a nature-old, he's not had a huge amount of racing on the flat. His best form has come around this trip and on very soft ground. He was good enough to run in the King George last year, and he was sent off quite a short price for the King George, in actual fact. His form held up pretty well through the season, but the bottom line is he won his first two starts on bad ground, absolutely bolted up at Chester, their May meeting last year, before following up in a listed race at York. He will almost certainly be at his best for this first start of the season, and he revels in the mud. So unlike the previous race, you've got a horse with an awful lot in his favour. You've got a couple of others who would have chances against him. Seismos is interesting for Marco Botti. We haven't seen much of him. He was very, very promising a couple of years ago. They ran him on very quick grounds at Ascot last spring, which wouldn't have suited him. And he came back jarred up from that and hasn't been seen since. He should appreciate the grind. He's not done much of his racing on heavy grind, but he's a big, heavy-topped horse who appreciates some ease. So he'd be interesting if back to his best. And Nearly Caught, who won at Pontefract in his final start last season, also loves the mud and should run well, although he probably needs further than a mile and six. So I'm not sure what price you're going to get about Clever Cookie. I'm seeing a sort of 11-8 tissue price. He looks around an even money shot to me. Seismos is put in very short. At 3-1 on the tissue, given that he's been off the course for a long time. But he's an interesting dark one in there. You'd need a bigger price to get involved in him. But Clever Cookie looks pretty solid.
Okay, Rory's sticking with Clever Cookie then in the 350 at Nottingham. We go to Nottingham's 425 now. A handicap here over an extended mile trip. 12 runners down for this class three. And on paper, Rory, it looks fairly open, this one.
It does. Although, again, it's not that easy to find horses who are absolutely rock solid. Captain Revelation would have been very interesting on different grounds, and I think a few people will use the argument that he's won twice at Southall in recent weeks, and suggesting that will translate well to heavy ground, but that doesn't tend to be the way. He's the son of Captain Rio, who was a soft ground performer himself, but his offspring do particularly well on fibre sand, and Captain Revelation's never raced on ground this soft. If he handles it, he's got a tremendous chance, because he's the likeliest leader, and on this sort of ground, on the inner course at Nottingham, getting an easy lead could be crucial. In saying an easy lead, I think he will be pressed for that as well. So he's not guaranteed to get loose on it. But he would be interesting at a price. Hill Claudius is another one, talking about horses who have been off the track for a while. He's not been seen for 600 days since easily winning a maiden at Newmarket and soft ground in August 2014. That suggested that he might be up to making his mark in minor pattern company. And he comes back after almost 2 years off with a rating of 87, which could be workable, but you don't know how far forward he's been or what problems he's had. But he's one to bear in mind and look at the market with. But the one who made most appeal for me was Greenside, a son of Dubawi, who's bred to handle the ground. He was progressive last year until running poorly on the all-weather in his final start. I think you could probably ignore that run. He'd won before that at Lingfield and then at Newmarket, winning a handicap of mark of 76, a form that's worked out pretty well. And after only four career outings, he should improve further. Ocean Murphy is a very good booking for Henry Candy. And I thought Greenside, of all of these, looked the one open to most improvement. The ground should be okay for him on pedigree. And with most of these being exposed, he was the one for me.
Greenside then for Rory in the Nottingham 425. We go now to the artificial surface and taking Kempton 745. A handicap here over a mile and three. Six runners down for this one, Rory. We've got four last time out winners in the field, and the other two weren't disgraced either, so plenty of good form being brought to the table.
Yeah, it's a very trappy looking race because obviously these three-year-olds haven't had much racing. Most of them are improving, and it's a case of working out who's got the most improvement to come and who's going to be best suited by track and trip. I'd imagine Speed Jewel would be favourite. Mark Johnson, son of Street Cry, who didn't look anything out of the ordinary in maidens last year, was a little bit expensive to follow, but improved markedly to win a 7-furlong event at Southall last month, suggesting he's a different horse. He's improved a lot from 2 to 3, and he should continue to do so. Slight concern with him, obviously, is that his win has come on fibre sand, and he's back to polytrack here. And his sire, Street Cry, has a good strike rate on fibre sand, and not quite so good here at Kempton. It's not bad. Mm. There's not a massive difference between them, but it's enough to make you think twice at shortish prices. Lord George is very interesting. Again, he's switching services. He won his maiden at Wolverhampton on the Tapita. But he shouldn't, on pedigree, have that much of an issue with polytrack. And James Fanshawe, who trains him, has got a very, very good record with horses like this at Kempton and would very much be James's happiest track. So Lord George has to be interesting. But again, working out how they're going to bet in this race, I thought they might be overpriced about one or two. Knight Commander is probably going to be the complete outsider of the party. A son of Sir Percy, who showed lots of promise early on but didn't really progress last year. I wonder if he's the type, like Street Jewel, to actually improve from 2 to 3, and now that he's strengthened up a bit, show more of what he's about. He's certainly got a similar sort of profile, and I wouldn't rule him out entirely for all he looks more exposed. But I'm going to take a chance on Jazzy, who's looking for a hat-trick. Both wins have come here over different trips as well. He won over a mile and a half in a slowly run race in January, and then he followed up 9 days later, dropped to a mile. Pretty impressive for a three-year-old to be able to win at a mile and a half and then a mile in quick succession. Up £7 for his latest win. This is his trip is probably about a mile and a quarter. I think he got away with a mile and a half because it was a slowly run race and didn't really test stamina. He's a furlong down in trip here, which I think will be fine for him. I thought the form of his win here last time out, although it's going back to January, I thought was pretty solid. And because he comes from an unfashionable yard and he's up in the weights and doesn't have as sexy a profile as one or two of these, I think he probably goes off at a decent price. But there are reasons to believe that he's still improving as well. And he would just about be my pick at the tissue prices. Again, looking at the prices I have, he's sort of a 13-2, 7-1 shot. And I think Street Jewel is a little bit short for all he could win. But Jazzy would be the pick from me, but I wouldn't want to be backing at a too short a price. But hopefully he's the type to be put in around that sort of price and maybe even drift, because he's representing Martin Keithley and Cathy Gannon, who wouldn't be the most feared of combinations.
Okay, Jazzy then for Rory, bidding to get up the hat-trick here at Kempton Park. Just remind us, please, then one more time of your four picks for the action on Wednesday.
In the 320 at Nottingham, I'm with Intiba. In the 350, which is the further flight stakes, Clever Cookie. The 425, Greenside. And in the 745 at Kempton, I'm with Jazzy.
Thank you very much, Rory. Enjoy the action on Wednesday, and indeed Aintree, and of course the National as well.
Thank you very much.
And remember, you can tune in to William Hill's Racing Radio from 1:50 p.m. on Wednesday afternoon. Gareth Topham, Chris Pimlott and Andrew Mount have got all the action covered from Nottingham, Catterick and Lingfield in the afternoon, Kempton Park in the evening. There's one Irish meeting as well over at Leopardstown. So loads to enjoy on William Hill's Racing Radio from 1:50. And best of luck if you are having a bet.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.